podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PPBN podcast as we finished up our little like NBA Finals sabbatical. Once our preview is done, let the whole finals sink in. And guess what, Adam? We don't have any more NBA. It's over. The NBA is over.
And in a shocking move to no one.
Yeah, no more. Well, no more NBAing, but you know, you'd be dissuaded by knowing that we will continue to have some episodes because we're obviously going to have something to make up that we can talk about. But let's first of all get into the main subject that we had talked about in the previous episode, and that was the 2017 NBA Finals between the Cleveland Cavaliers, who were the defending champions. It's kind of crazy to even think that they were, because it's not like it was a monumental upset by Cleveland. It was just that you just don't think that Cleveland won. It just surprises you still to this day. But they were the defending champions against the Golden State Super Warriors, and Kevin Durant, Steph Curry just absolutely stole the show. They won in five games. Cleveland basically had to have the greatest offensive first half ever to win game four. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and it was as expected. It was just like, well, how are you stopping this team? Durant, as we could see, you could arguably say he's the best player in the NBA right now.
Still think LeBron's better.
I was going to say arguably.
Yeah, so I would still say LeBron.
He's 1-1A. LeBron is the other 1-1A. And then Curry is right behind them.
Do you feel like Durant got better, or do you feel like there was just less, kind of like Miami LeBron, less pressure was on him, so it made it easier for him to freelance?
Oh, there was no pressure on him. He just, you know, there was no leadership role required. You just come in, shoot your shots. That's it. Whatever.
He won the Finals MVP. He was, you know, he was driving the bus there a little bit. I mean, I know that the numbers for Curry were crazy. He averaged like 27 points, 8 rebounds, 9 assists, over 2 steals. I mean, Curry was unbelievable. He outplayed Kyrie Irving this time versus last year, where Kyrie definitely outplayed Curry. There's no question there. But LeBron averaged a triple-double with 33, 12, and 10. But Durant had 35 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 assists, and he shot 58% from the field. I mean, that's crazy.
Well, that's what it comes down to. He shot. He was just hot the whole time, and, you know, he took – you know, Klay Thompson wasn't, you know, nowhere to be found. And it's okay, Durant's like, I'll take all your shots, and I'm hitting them all. And it's just, yeah, like you said, no stress. There's no, you know, they try to make it like, oh, this was the supervillain team. And in the end, like, nobody's like, everyone's like, okay, good for Durant. I guess he really wanted a championship. He has one. It's just really indifference to this title as opposed to, you know, boo Golden State or yay Golden State. It's just like, yeah, that's what happens when you buy the best player.
Well, did it feel that way? I mean, because I keep making the comparison. Did it feel that way when LeBron won his first title in Miami? Or do you feel like the hate was still super strong?
Well, that was the hate because they had, you know, completely – Boston traded for their three stars, which that was the origin of it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Miami was just like, hey, let's go all play together. And, you know, Bosch had no real reason to go down there. There was no incentive for him. He was – you know, the face of that franchise. So it's just like, yeah, of course they were the villains because, you know, and unfortunately LeBron was, you know, I'm on SportsCenter, this is a decision, I'm taking my talents to South Beach, oh, I'm going to, you know, have all the sound bites. Whereas Golden State, it was just, you know, Draymond Green.
Yeah, but there was still that, I mean, because we're beating a dead horse here, but like there was still that prevailing notion of, okay, Kevin Durant is joining the team that he almost eliminated. What a wimp. You know, that was kind of the...
Well, that was just it. It was like, you're not... You joined the team. You're not the leader. You're not... This isn't your team. You just joined the best team there is. And, yes. You know, obviously he doesn't care. You know, like, oh, what about your legacy about that? Well, obviously the times are different now where you'd rather just play with your friends as opposed to, you know, forging it on your own.
Yeah,
and
it's the buddy system. That's how it is. Everybody's bros. So
yeah, they won. They're going to win next year, most likely, and...
Yeah, I think it's not going to get... The sphincters might start getting tight in 2019 when Klay Thompson can get a max contract, and simply Golden State won't have the room for it after you brought in the new money in for Kevin Durant, who's going to either sign a 1-1 or sign a long-term contract this summer but get 35% max. And then there's Steph Curry, who's also going to probably get a super max. And then you basically – you're totally and utterly capped out. You'll use – they'll use every provision they have, so they'll be hard capped. And they're going to be repeat taxpayers. So
yeah, and then it gets really expensive. And then also we must talk about the fact that Golden State stayed healthy these 2 years.
Yeah, well, Durant had the knee problem, but the way he played in the postseason, you almost immediately forgot that.
But being out for, like, a little bit as opposed to – I'm talking about season ending, you know
– a catastrophic
8 to 12 week tear. Yeah, this was – he was out for how many games, really?
I think it was about 25 games. I think that's how much that may have been how many games he was out, but they played great in the, without him, to the point where people are like, "Oh, Curry's got his mojo back because he doesn't have to worry about Durant." That's the only thing that can get in the way. It's just that trouble in paradise type of narrative that never really kind of. I don't think that really happened in Miami. The first year was rocky, but it never really felt like they had like a chemistry problem. It felt to me like Miami, when they got eliminated by the Spurs, that they just got a little too old and the depth behind them just wasn't there anymore, you know?
Yep, and the same thing is happening now to Golden State. And, you know, again, they got lucky with having old money and new money overlapping. However, that's now going to end. So what's going to happen when you don't have that $6 million, you know, or $8 million now, mid-level exemption is now $25 million because you're a repeater. That low level is now twice
this
as
is
much.
This is a deeper discussion we could talk about another time, but just give me a very small one. Who will be the team that when we go into the next CBA will be the loophole team that can take advantage? Would it be a team like Milwaukee because they have Giannis on a 25-year contract, a $25 million salary instead of a 35? Is it somebody like – ooh, I don't know. Maybe Minnesota with Towns and Wiggins. I mean, who would be able to – have that narrow window where they can basically overlap a big contract? Boston seems like one that makes sense too.
Philly teams, Denver teams with rookie contracts and lots of upcoming draft picks.
Okay, that would be Boston. Denver's got a pretty good slow. Yeah, and I keep mentioning Milwaukee because I just feel like they're on the right track. It's so funny because they're literally looking for a GM as we speak, even though they have Justin Zanuck.
Are they on the right track?
I like where they're headed.
They gave out tons of money to Plumlee, and just thankfully through the stupidity of Charlotte, they managed somebody to take
who immediately had a knee injury and couldn't play. Yeah,
you know, they shelled out money to big money to Dellavedova. They shelled out money to Plumlee, and it's just like, well, your signings are kind of questionable.
I think when Monroe's contract is over, that team's going to take off. That's just my personal opinion. Like, they're going to find an identity as like this defensive stud. I mean, we're getting way off track, but okay, NBA Finals. 1 out of 5, give me a score. Your level of enjoyment.
2.
A 2? I give it a 3 just because I thought the offense was fantastic.
I give it a 2 based solely on the storyline that this is the championship. This should be A versus B. This basically just, I forget who said it. Was it Bill Simmons? He was like, this is what happened. This is what an all-star game would look like if they actually tried.
I think, yeah, Bill Simmons said that.
And that's what it was. It just looked like an all-star game. It didn't look like – it didn't have that seriousness of like, this is the finals. This is what it all comes down to. It's just like, yeah, this is an all-star game.
Yeah, game 5 in the fourth quarter absolutely felt that way when Cleveland realized that Golden State was not going to miss enough shots for them to keep possessions. And then LeBron knew that they were just – that Golden State was just trying to prevent threes from Cleveland, so he was barreling into the lane, like doing a spin move, like what, like – 3 or 4 times in a row for scores, and it was like, okay, we'll relent on these 2-point baskets because we can at least make 1 3 or 2 threes here so that we can keep the lead at 10. And it kind of turned into a little bit of a smorgasbord. But I thought that game 4 was very entertaining just because of the offensive explosion by Cleveland and how rattled Golden State was. I thought – and also the officiating was kind of – It was anytime the NBA officials get shit on, I think it's hilarious because I actually think the NBA officials are very good.
No,
I think
The
college officiating is garbage.
Well, the college officiating, there's too many. It's kind of hard to have good officiating with, what is it, 300 some odd Division I teams?
351.
Yeah, if you have 351, so on a weekend you have to have how many crews all over? And then that doesn't even mention D2, D3, NAIA.
And even in the tournament, you have these nationally televised games with their national crews, like the crews that they say are the most respected. And some of them aren't even from the same conference, so there's very bad communication skills between the crews. Whereas in the NBA, they work together constantly.
And you
kind of had a retort there.
And to have that game 4, that show was so god awful. Just, it was like, I can't tell who the referees are pulling for. It was like they were just bad all around. And I guess that's a sign of a good ref if both teams are like, you know, what's going on. But they were just awful in that game 4.
Well, there's always a game where it feels like, okay, the Zebras are just trying to get their name in here. And that kind of felt like game 4. Game 3 was a very good game. You know, I just wish the games in Golden State were better and closer. You know, but the offenses were good. But Cleveland went down. Golden State got their championship 2 out of the last 3 years. Very, very likely to be back. Spoiler alert. Not trying to make our 2017-18 preview too terrible, but I think – I got a feeling Golden State's going to be high up there, and I think Cleveland will probably be still up there too. Now, let's go ahead and get to the gist of our – going to be our two-part – episode. So we're going to have part 1 this week, and we'll give you part 2 right before the NBA draft, which is on June 22nd. And we're going to just talk about the Western Conference this time. First of all, the NBA draft overall, there's a litany of freshmen that are going to be drafted, a lot of one and dones to start. I think there's an anticipation that out of the lottery, it might literally all be freshmen and 2 internationals. Maybe just 1 international. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's just a freshman-heavy class. And, you know, that led to Adam Silver having to comment on it, even though he doesn't really care.
He called Ben Simmons a half and done at LSU.
That's basically what they are now.
Mm-hmm. Because you only have to be eligible for the fall semester. After the spring, it's over, and you can just leave.
Yep, but unless you're just egregiously bad, like Ben Simmons just didn't go to class or anything, yeah, you just have to feign your way through the last 6 weeks. But
you mentioned to me that you kind of had some comments to say about the one and done.
Well, the issue it was going to be, you know, the issue Silver brought up was, well, it hurts your brand as a player to be one and done, and then. You know, you have no fallback. You can't. Nobody really knows who you are. You're just an obscure player. And then, how good does it do? So I was just, you know, I was gonna bring up some names for you, and you could be like, well, did they make a right decision or not?
Okay. Well, first of all, if what you're iterating is that Adam Silver saying that it's bad for your brand to play 1 year in college, go to the NBA, I think that's incorrect because of the fact that. No matter what school you go to, like even Markel Fultz going to Washington, guess how many fans that you just picked up on your way to the NBA? Pretty much every Washington fan that's ever watched Washington basketball.
Yeah, but he was a number 1 pick. Let's just, you know, I only went back 7 years for you.
Okay.
And it basically, if you're a top 10 pick in anything, well, you should be exempt from that. So I excluded, you know, Cousins, Wall.
Yeah. So you're going with the kind of like the Zach Levines and the people
yeah,
like
that. Yeah, so here, you know, in 2010, it was out of the top 10, Xavier Henry, Eric Bledsoe, Avery Bradley, Daniel Orton, Whiteside, Stevenson, and Tiny Gallion.
Keith Tiny Gallion, wow, yeah.
You
okay.
Know, so is he – so well, let's exclude the Kentucky players because we've talked about them, how they have to go because – The school is sort of screwed with they have, you know, you can't give out too many scholarships. So you're sort of pushing them out the door because, well, your position's already taken for next year.
Okay. Here's one thing too, that Adam Silver kind of missed the point on. One and done within itself is a brand. So despite the school you go to, you've already kind of you're already riding the coattails of the success of the one and done. You know, it was a little bit of risky waters at first when the one and done was initially put in because of the fact that the NBA made the rule about being, you know, being a year removed from high school or 20 years of age or whatever the age limit is. And so when Oden and Durant did it, they went 1-2. And then Derrick Rose was a one and done. OJ Mayo was a one and done. And then the trend started. And then people realized, okay, we can make this work in our favor. And then you get guys like Jrue Holiday that is a, that plays his freshman year in UCLA. He doesn't even do much at UCLA. And he gets picked, I want to say, in the lottery by it wasn't New Orleans. Wasn't it Philadelphia that picked him in 2009? And so it's not necessarily just like the brand as it comes to the schools that they join and their, you know, the fans of those campuses, which I think can benefit them as they go along the way. And also just the experience of playing against, I guess you could say, comparative talent, depending on how good or how bad you actually are. But okay, the one and done narrative itself helps people like the top guys and lottery guys, but it does hurt people like a Tiny Gallen or a Lance Stevenson.
I will name off the names. Just a quick yes or no. Was it a mistake for them to come out? Would a 2-year rule have helped them?
For those names that you mentioned for 2010?
I'm just gonna start naming off names.
Okay. Now. Sure. Go for it.
We've already mentioned 2010 and
yeah.
Tobias Harris.
He probably would have been better off playing one more year, but his situation, like a lot of these people, different circumstances, was that the coach was being fired anyway.
Corey Joseph.
Yes.
Josh Selby.
No, he was
Mo Harkless.
Yes.
Troy Roten.
Tony Roten?
Yeah.
No, he was destined. He wanted to go to the NBA as fast as he could.
Marquise Teague.
Yeah, he could have stayed another year.
Quincy Miller.
Oh, for sure. He absolutely came out a year too early.
Shabazz Muhammad.
No, he was the number one overall high school recruit. He was determined to go pro.
Archie Goodwin.
He wasn't an NBA player. He probably should have played 4 years.
Grant Jarrett or Ricky Lito.
Wow. I mean, can they play? Can you give him a 4-and-done rule?
Zach LaVine.
Zach LaVine was because of the athleticism was gone.
And Tyler Ennis.
Yeah, I wish he'd have played another year at Syracuse.
And now we're getting to 2015 and 2016 with just the main slew of things. So.
Yeah, well, didn't they have a ton of them that came just from Kentucky, like Trey Lyles and
Devin Booker.
Yeah, Booker is just one where after the fact, you know, especially after the 70-point game where – can you say it's made his name? The Devin Booker game?
Yeah.
Well, Lord, people are like, oh, he's a superstar. Everyone knew it. I don't think people knew that when he came out of Kentucky. Like, I mean, we did the draft preview that year. You can rewind if you have to. Like, we knew he'd be good and that he was a good 3-point shooter, but no one knew he was going to be like a star. Like, now he's a star in Phoenix. But, you know, we're going to talk about Phoenix pretty soon. But I just didn't see that. Towns, yes. I thought he was going to be a star. I thought Cauley Stein was going to be a star.
Yeah, you know, like Oubre, Rashad Vaughn, Tyus Jones, Chris McCullough, Cliff Alexander.
I thought that Chris McCullough could have played another year at Syracuse. That just like Tyler Ennis, I thought they probably he probably should have made it work. Another one you mentioned was Kelly Oubre. I think he was determined to go pro.
And I think, you know, this is sort of hearkening on Silver's case here. Last year, Henry Ellenson, Malachi Richardson, Scalabissier, DeJounte Murray, Dinyata Davis, Sheik Diallo, Diamond Stone, and Steven Zimmerman. All those guys should have been, you know,
McCaw and who was the other one that you mentioned? Zimmerman. They went to UNLV where the coach was fired. And they had absolutely no intention of playing under a rebuild job. So they said, well, we'll just go ahead and take our chances in the NBA. It worked out for McCaw because guess where he got picked? You know, he got picked by the Warriors. You know, Zimmerman, I think, went to the Magic.
Yeah.
And he's like wallowing in the D League. So, you know, hey, Well, here's the question. Is Steve Zimmerman this year going to wind up on the Orlando blue team or the Orlando white team? That's the true intrigue.
Okay, so with that being said, just to sort of preview what we have going today, I got some names for you right now to sort of think
about.
And
that's going to be this year's one-and-done crop. Is that correct?
Kobe Simmons, Tony Bradley, Frank Jackson,
Ike
Anagbu.
Frank Jackson should have gone back another year. Onagbogu, I think, was made a good decision to go pro now.
Giles, Patton, Bam Adebayo.
De'Aaron Fox.
They're going to go top 10, so I excluded them. Oh, Jarrett Allen, Collins, Ted Kapita, TJ Leaf.
Ted Kapita from NC State?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't even know he was in the pool. Well, I'll say this. I do not think Ted Kapita is getting drafted this year. I'm sorry.
Way to spoil the draft right now for all those Ted Kapita fans.
Yeah, I don't think Ted Kapita is getting drafted. when you say Collins, you mean Zach? That's the freshman, because I think John Collins from Wake Forest, the center, is
Zach Collins.
Yeah, Zach is a guy where, like, you know, you see this in the tournament. Maybe Tony Bradley kind of fits the bill here too, where you just play so well in the tournament that, like, Malachi Richardson last year, where it's like your stock just shoots up the board. And I mean, it's hard to say because it's such a small sample size, but these general managers in the NBA have so much ADHD that they just. Literally, they look at the small tape, the small sample size that they have, and they say, well, he's a good shot blocker. He's got a jump shot. He's got a hook shot. He's got pretty good bounce. He's going to be able to make it in the NBA, so let's pick Zach Collins. So if you're pretty sure you're going to get picked in the, you know, number 10 or number 15, yeah, do it. You know, I mean, remember the guy in Cincinnati, DeMar Johnson? Like, I mean, he went top 10 in a really, really weak draft in 2000. But, I mean, if you're being told you're a lottery guy, you have to go.
But in their minds, they always think they are, regardless of who they are.
Yeah, like Kobe Simmons. Kobe Simmons was determined. Like, he's like, I keep saying that, like Josh Selby and Lance Stevenson, and who was another one I said in that vein, too, Kelly Oubre Jr., where they know, like, okay, I want to go to the NBA. This is my goal. That's what I want to do. You know, and maybe some people, they get a taste of college like Marcus Smart did. The other one who was the one that came back, Miles Bridges, let me throw you that one really quick. If Miles Bridges was in this draft, where would he be picked?
Mid to late.
But he would be in the first round.
Yeah.
Very rarely does anyone turn down first round money.
There's always a few. There's always one or two.
Yeah, and some people, a lot of them, they feel like they made a mistake. Like Ivan Rabb, a lot of people feel like he made a mistake, the big man out of Cal.
Yeah.
So and then there's some where it works out really great. You know, Justin Jackson came back as a junior after a shitty combine. He won a national championship in North Carolina. His defense got better. His three-point shot got better. And now he's a lottery pick.
And also, yeah, there's that, and it comes down to the right team has to draft you. Yeah, you can be – you know, do you want that lottery money now to be on a shitty team where you suck and then all of a sudden you're out of the league because you didn't develop? Or do you want to be like Corey Joseph?
The two people I immediately think of are Marquise Chris and Dragan Bender. I'm not trying to poo-poo on Phoenix, but those were just bad. That was just a bad timing type of draft pick, you know?
Yeah, you don't draft two players the same thing. But yeah, it just comes down to, you know, do you want to be, you know, Denyon Davis? I'm a top 10 pick all of a sudden. Okay, now you're the 31st pick. Mm-hmm. Is it good that you're in Memphis where a team might develop you a little bit, but...
Well, remember, he was one of the green room guys. And when you're a green room guy and, you know, you don't want that Aaron Rodgers thing going over you. Who was the one that got picked in the second round out of high school? Wasn't it Rashard Lewis?
Yep.
He was in the green room for, like, into the second round, and the Sonics picked him. And, you know, he kind of had that forlorn look on his face, like, I cannot believe it took this long to get picked. And that's kind of what happened with Deontay Davis, I remembered. And, you know, you feel bad for those people. But, I mean, look, there's a reason your stock is where it is. Do some people make a mistake? Yeah. Draymond freaking Green got picked in the second round. Marc Gasol was an afterthought when his foreign rights were picked up by the Lakers, you know. So you never know sometimes with the second round. So as we're going through these teams, and I promise you we will be getting to them in a second, when we get into the second round, you know, which is past number 30, there are some names we're going to say where down the road you're going to say, man, that guy actually turned out being pretty good. And then we're going to give you a lot of names that you'll never hear again. So But that's the completist in us, right, Adam?
Yeah, so let's start with the number one pick in the Boston Celtics.
The number one pick in the Boston Celtics? We're doing the Western Conference.
So we're not doing the usual, just picks 1 through 60?
No.
Well, this is something different.
No, we're going to be doing we're going to be splitting it off by conferences. So
all right, this is a nice little new twist you've added to this. So that will keep me up considering
This is fantastic for the format.
Considering no. I've done very little research due to life events and I've got the top 11 done, and then we're just going to rely on you to sort of tell me how the draft will go and all.
Would you like to finalize what life event happened so that you can confirm it to the listeners, the 100 listeners that we have?
Well, there's a new life in the household.
Adam's wife had a baby girl, so congratulations to Adam Murray. Nice round of applause. So.
Yeah,
whatever. You know, you're the one that put it on Facebook, oh, here's the baby. You are just as excited as she was.
No, she was much more.
She was thrilled, huh?
There's like new Facebook pictures like every 2 hours from her, whereas I'm like, okay. Yeah, I have to put some sort of an announcement out.
You do realize you're in about 5 years, your Facebook has now become the look at my daughter filter feed. That's what it is.
I've seen that from other.
Yeah, including me.
It's just going to be, I don't have any Facebook posts now. It's just, here's the kid.
No, we're going to be doing it for the Western Conference for this part. The next part, we will do the Eastern Conference. But the Western Conference is a little front-loaded. There's a little bit more pizzazz. We do have a couple of teams that are hard-capped with no draft picks. The chances of buying in or trading in are very low, but we'll talk about their team needs and see if there's any interest in what might be a good fit for them if they tried to trade in. Trades happen constantly, especially in the second round. They're impossible to predict, but we're going to do our absolute best with the positions that those teams have as we speak going into the draft or as we preview this draft and give you a round ball idea of who we think might be picked in those positions. So, you know, Adam and I always talk about the D's, that the Western Conference, we talked about it. We need more A's, B's, and C's in the Western Conference. How do we make this happen?
I'd move some teams to Albuquerque.
Yeah. Wasn't that one of the expansion teams, Albuquerque?
Albuquerque, Anchorage.
We need
Acapulco.
Let's get to the D's, Adam Murray. Dallas Mavericks. Now, this was a little easy because they only have one pick this year, and that's the ninth pick. Remember, they traded their second-round pick in the Nerlens Noel deal to Philadelphia, who has four second-round picks of their own. Dallas had a bad year, you would say, huh?
Well, you had no talent. This was definitely, you know, you could tell it was going to be an off year when
openly admitted to tanking. That's how bad it got.
There's only so much you could do when you have to hope Yogi Ferrell is your savior.
Yeah, now him, Seth Curry kind of did okay. Harrison Barnes had actually a really efficient season. It's just that if you're the best player, then that's not necessarily a good sign. I mean, I'm not trying to poo-poo on Harrison Barnes, but hey, guess what? They replaced you with Kevin Durant, and now Golden State is unstoppable. So what does that say about you? You know what I'm trying to say?
Well, he was also a non-factor in Golden State, and to show he can do anything and be a centerpiece, it's like, okay, good. Well, he's developed, and we didn't know he could.
Yeah, so I guess a little bit of a win-win for both of them. Barnes got paid and gets more shine and on a lesser team, and Kevin Durant's a champion. Dallas Mavericks at number 9, their needs, point guard. Absolutely desperately need a point guard. I know you mentioned Yogi Ferrell, but you cannot rely on D-League reclamation projects or surprise prospects in order to, you know, make your name and or, you know, find point guards. You can't find diamonds in the rough like that all the time. It's not feasible. And Ferrell, I don't think, is a starting level NBA point guard anyway. Would you agree?
Agreed.
All right. Size, obviously had a lot of trouble, especially after they trade away Andrew Bogut at the trade deadline. And then athleticism is necessary, especially after you traded away Justin Anderson in the Nerlens Noel deal. You are pretty much in the wheelhouse that Nerlens Noel is going to get extended by the Dallas Mavericks. They have the cap space to do it. Nerlens Noel seemed to fit well in Dallas, and it's nice. It's a nice step into the youth movement, especially after you get through the Dirk era, because we only have one more year of Dirk Nowitzki, most likely. At the ninth pick, I've got three guys, and to be honest, this is about the firmest one or the firmest set that I can think of when it comes to three guys. Like, I am absolutely convinced one of those three guys is going to get picked by Dallas. Dennis Smith Jr., the point guard out of NC State, really athletic, not great defensively, but he's got some ups. Frank Ntilikina, who's a guard out of, I want to say, France, right?
Germany.
Yeah, Germany. And then Lauri Markkanen, who is originally from Finland, but he played a year at Arizona. Bit of a stretch for. Who do you like between the three?
Smith should be gone by them, so it's going to be Frank
Ntilikina
or Markkanen. So it's going to be, well, do you want to have Dirk's replacement, or do you want to have a point guard that you haven't had for so long?
But does Ntilikina seem like, I mean, we were just talking about one and dones. That kind of felt like Jeff Teague when, I don't remember who got picked first between Jeff Teague and Drew Holiday, but I remember one of them feeling like a backup plan for the other team. Like,
Holiday was picked sixth. He wasn't like 20.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, Teague kind of fell through the cracks, but does Ntilikina kind of feel like a backup plan in case you don't get Dennis Smith?
No, he's just that foreign mystery guy that, you know, like Dennis Schroeder brought. Like, oh, well, who is he? We don't know how he is. We don't have much tape. We just have weird EuroLeague tape where they play a completely different style. And he plays, you know, where everybody plays 12 minutes.
Yeah, I think he's 6'5". A lot of people have some reservations that he can even play the point guard, that he's more of a natural two, that his jump shot's a lot better than people imagined. But he's not. He doesn't necessarily have like the outright point guard skills like that really shine, like when you see Dennis Smith or Markelle Fultz or Lonzo Ball on the tape and it just like pops out. Like Ntilikina doesn't do that. So if he, you know, it's almost like Dennis Schroeder, where if he really shines, it's one of those things where he's got to develop the skills that you haven't really seen fully blossom yet.
Yeah, so which of those three do you think they're going to?
For me, I think it's going to be Markkanen. I think Markkanen will wind up getting picked there.
All right, I think they're just too desperate for a point guard. They got to take Nikola, because there's no – unless you're going to try to pick one up in free agency, and just, which, you know, it's kind of hard to do if you're going on a youth movement, I would just say you go with the point guard and have him get some chemistry with Harrison Barnes, as opposed to getting a Drew Holiday or a George Hill or,
yeah, you know, going after a name. Yeah. And listen, if there's anything we know about Mark Cuban over the last maybe 3 or 4 years in the offseason, he always strikes out on big free agent targets. I mean, I guess you can count Harrison Barnes as a scorer, but I mean, look at the other ones, Dwight Howard, DeAndre Jordan, help me out. I know there's a Darren Williams way back in 2010. Like, he's missed out on quite a lot of them. So, I mean, it's not 2010. I'm sorry, 2012 with Darren Williams. But it just seems like it's one of those things with Dallas where you just better kind of going for youth. But you really need a point guard in the worst way. Denver Nuggets. Surprisingly good. Really good offense. Nikola Jokic really blossomed. They have a lot of depth. They just don't know what the hell to do with the roster, because they just got kind of like a real mishmash of guys. Their needs, I would say, a defensive big. They need somebody to replace Emmanuel Mudiay at point guard, because I don't think Mudiay is the answer, and I think Denver is slowly figuring that out. And they need more experience. They need to figure out a way to either sign in free agency or bring over somebody through a trade that can really show the young guys how to win. They have the number 13 pick in the draft, in the lottery. How do you feel, like, who do you feel like would fit here? Like, what kind of position are you looking at for Denver?
Denver really needs nobody. They just need to get older. The problem is, yeah, they're not going to get anybody good. So you can either swing for the fences and go for, an OG Anunoby.
OG Anunoby out of the kind of a small forward / power forward out of Indiana. No offensive skill, but it's one of those things where defensively he pays dividends.
You sort of have to go for that, you know, figuring, you know, because Chandler wants to leave. Gallinari might leave. So all you have is a big hole at the three. And really no young players because, you know, Hernan Gomez is more of a four than that. He's a little big.
They had experience with guys like Mike Miller and, you know, Daryl Arthur and Jameer Nelson even, who wound up taking a lot of Moutier's minutes because Moutier was so inefficient. I don't think point guard is necessarily, like, the must here, even though I did have Frank Ntilikina as a consideration if he falls that far. Anunoby, I think you hit it on the head. I think that's one that I was pretty much pointing at. The other two, one is Harry Giles, who's a really talented, athletic power forward, but he's suffered two knee injuries, you know, and he had a very forgettable one and done freshman season at Duke, but his inventory in high school is pretty spectacular.
Yeah, that's the thing, is if you're reduced to going off high school tape, which is what they're doing now, because there's not much to see.
There was nothing at Duke, yeah. You know?
There's nothing to see. Even if you do have a lot of Duke tape or Kentucky tape, well, you're in the system. You're just playing the Coach K system or the Patino system or the Coach Cal system. So all your weaknesses are hidden. So it's you're playing against high school kids who aren't even playing basketball. So it's kind of hard when everybody's high school tape, they all average 45 points and 20 rebounds.
Yeah, and I mean, Giles was one of those guys who, I mean, he looked great in some of the like the USA basketball stuff that he was in, but then he had the second ACL tear, and it just seemed like it limited him. He's got big hands, he's got long arms, he's just got a lot of like physical tools that you just don't see often out of college recruits, you know. So he's got those things that you see out of the top prospects, even though it didn't show in the stat sheet. Justin Patton, another kind of that one's, I guess, more of a wild card. Is that fair to say at number 13, or is that
kind of high?
Yeah, I mean, he's a big man out of Creighton. He's a good rim runner. Defensively, he's okay. You know, he's got some work to do. He can make a three-point shot. His field goal percentage was very high. Nobody really expected him because he was a redshirt freshman. Nobody had seen him the year before, so he kind of came out like out of nowhere. So there's a lot of options there for Denver. I think Anunoby is pretty accurate, right? A pretty accurate idea. The other two picks are at number 49 and number 51. The two I thought of because they're so close together. Frank Mason III, who won the Wooden Award at Kansas. Very small point guard, but he's a good shot maker. He was very good at the combine. He jumped a really high vertical. And then Thomas Bryant out of Indiana, who's just got long, long arms. He had like a 7'3 wingspan. But he didn't really do as much as I wish he did at Indiana. Is that fair to say?
Oh, he was not very good at all. And the problem with Denver and their second round picks is they have no roster spaces for these people. So if you're drafting these college kids, you can't really stash them. They don't even have a D League team. So
yeah, I mean they didn't even have enough room for Malik Beasley. They barely had minutes for Juan Wancho, and they like Wancho, you know. And then by the way, you brought in Mason Plumlee, who you might be stuck having to match an offer sheet for just to save face on a really bad trade that you made with Portland. So they got a lot of, you know, a lot of maneuvering that they have to do, you know, in Denver. But do you have any other players in that?
No, I don't. For second round picks, I don't expect them. Just two random internationals, like, you know, Jokic, you know, he wasn't on many teams' radar because he was out of shape and didn't have the conditioning and the really, you know, they people questioned his heart.
I don't think anyone
heart.
Knew that he was that good of a passer until like his second, until this most recent season. It was like a revelation. Like nobody saw that coming. I don't think Denver knew it, that Jokic was that good.
Yeah, so I think that's just, they're just going to take another international flyer.
Okay, I mean, Hernan Gomez, they hope that. So what kind of... I know international is like kind of something that you like to keep an eye on. Like in this wheelhouse, like what do you see there? Like George DePaula out of Brazil.
Sure, that sounds good. The amount of research done is, you're lucky I'm able to keep up with you on the NCAA guys. there's Alexander Venzikoff, or did he pull out?
Jonathan Jahn, even though he's had the scare with Marfan syndrome, which is the same disease that shut down Isaiah Austin, even though he eventually got cleared in a lesser basketball league. But do you think that's something where they might try to take a flyer on Jahn? Seven foot two big man.
That's a bigger issue than there is. I don't know. Kankar from Vlatko Kankar is Slovenian. He's there. There's a Latvian.
Alpha Kaba, is he still in there?
Alpha Kaba, I think he dropped out.
Yeah, it's I think there's only like 9 candidates.
There's 10 internationals, and I expect all 10 to be taken because, again, you could just take a flyer on them and keep them in Europe as opposed to, well, here's the NCAA guy. Well, we might just lose them anyways. And
yeah. Golden State Warriors, team needs. Not much, huh? Just some trophy space? Is that the biggest need?
Credit card.
Well, they're going to definitely need it this summer, especially after Durant and Curry and Iguodala are done sending them to the dry cleaners. They have no draft picks, which is absolutely no shot because that's what taxpayers do. I do think there is a chance, though, they can trade back in because they might be willing to take on a second round pick. Like, I think Patrick McCall was a first round pick last year. Is that
no,
right?
He was second and he was 39th.
He was a 39th pick and he worked out well for the Warriors. They like him. So, but that was a pick that I believe they already had that they used to get McCall. They also got Damian Jones
was their first round pick last year. And 2 years ago was Kevon Looney. So
yeah, I think they're a little bit ahead of the game in that they're champions, they're taxpayers. But if you have a good player and you have a draft pick, use it. You know, don't just throw it away. Don't dump it just for the sake of economics. Now, in about 2 years, when you know all the issues happen with their cap space, yes, they might be in a situation where they have, like Cleveland is, where they have to dump the draft picks. They have no choice. But for now, maybe they can trade back in. What do you think?
Oh yeah, they could buy one. It's just money and they're not repeat offenders yet. So if there's someone, because their bench is going to be sorely lacking, and then, you know, who are they going to pick? Who knows? That's just a player they like. It could be literally anybody.
Yeah, I mean, Portland has no second-round pick, so, you know, that's a team that's looking for money. And so maybe Philadelphia's got 4 of those second-round picks, like we mentioned. Maybe they could buy one of those in, get some kind of guard. So, you know, they love those swing guys. Maybe they can get a three-point shooter out of the lake. Maybe Eric Mika, the big man out of BYU. Just a random name like that I just mentioned that they might just look into that we just not even thinking about. They do need some backup size. You know, because they might not get David West back. They might JaVale McGee might not come back. So I think they do need another backup big man, whether it be through free agency or through the draft. The Houston Rockets, they obviously defense is going to be a problem, but that's a Mike D'Antoni system. It's sort of built in that they don't play the tightest form of defense. Is that fair?
They play no defense whatsoever by design.
Yeah, but I think here's the thing. At least on face value, they could try something to try to make the shot blocking better, like, or to try to make the defense a little bit better. Now they have the 43rd pick and the 45th pick. They do not have a first round pick because they traded away to the Lakers for Lou Williams. You think that was a fair trade?
Well, if you could trade for more shooting with no defense, then yes, that's the wonderful trade.
And you get him on another year, which is actually a fairly valuable deal because Lou Williams is like a very good off the bench player. And I think the contract he signed was something around what, $8 million a year? It really wasn't that much.
It was 8 or 10.
It was a fair deal. Something in the range of seven. He's getting paid $7 million. That's low. But at 43 and 45 second round picks, I'll give you two. One is Jonah Bolden, who had originally committed to UCLA. He went overseas. Pretty good player. He's more of like a forward, a small forward, right?
Jonah Bolden?
Yeah.
You caught me sleeping here. No, he's a power forward.
Okay, so he's like a 6'10 power forward type. Because I never saw him at UCLA, so I never really got a really good look at him. you know. But I know he went overseas. He played for Rudniki Basket. But he wound up playing really like a lot of major minutes. People were very surprised at how he blossomed down the stretch, because you know these international leagues, they play late. Like they play past the NBA finals sometimes. So you know, there's some players that are in the mix here that are still playing right now. You know.
Yeah, all the conference leagues are wrapping up this week and whatnot, but. The problem Houston has is they don't have many roster spots available. And as far as development, you have Sam Decker and Montrezl Harrell who are going to take the majority of your minutes. So be like, in theory, oh, you know who would help them? Like a Jaron Blossom game. But, well, you already have a developmental player who's in that spot.
Yeah, but the lack of size showed immediately when Nene went down. There's two things that happened. Remember, Clint Capella went down with the knee injury midseason, and they were forced to play Shinano Onuwaku. I remember this because people made a big gag out of the fact that Shinano Onuwaku shoots free throws underhanded. And it was the first time, I think, in the NBA in like dozens of years that someone shot a free throw underhanded when Onuwaku did it, because he was playing the minutes to replace Capella. And then when Nene went down with a hamstring injury against the Spurs, they literally had no size to support them after Capella, because Montrezl Harrell's not a good rebounder. So size is a big issue. At 45, I consider Jonathan Motley out of Baylor. Is that kind of one that you're thinking about?
There's Motley, or maybe like Derek White from Colorado.
Well, he's more backup. Of a point guard, though. Yeah, you're talking about more of like a different type of point guard.
Yeah, because who's backing up Harden for one? So you have Patrick Beverley who comes out sometimes starting, sometimes not.
Yeah, but he's more in that Dellavedova range where he's the bulldog defensive point guard. Kind of a different thing.
Yeah, and so when you put Eric Gordon out on the floor, well, you know, they need a backup point guard.
Okay, which is fair. They do need.
And then a backup big man who, at that, there's no real big man out there who's worth anything, really.
Well, I think a lot of those power forwards are going to be snatched up by then. Once you get into, like, the late first round, I think a lot of them are going to be gone, you know, whereas you know, you might be able to find some wings and some guards, but, you know, the point guard class this year is very deep. It's probably the deepest position in the draft this year. But when it comes to center, I mean, it gets a little bare. You know, Tony Bradley will be gone. Maybe Chris Boucher out of Oregon? I mean, even though he's coming off of a torn ACL and he's like 26 years old.
And yeah, that's the, you know.
Isn't he 26 or is he like 25 years old? He's like an older player. He was like a six-year player.
Yeah, he is. He is older, but this might be one of the international picks for their second one. It just stash somebody over.
Yeah, and I think they did that with a Chinese player. Is that right, or was that the Clippers that took the Chinese player?
I think Houston took Zuki.
Zuki. Los Angeles Clippers, who we just mentioned. Team needs. I think they need a rabbit's foot, because it seems like they're just absolutely cursed every time they get to the playoffs. They need a small forward in perpetuity, because they never have the cap space or the good or the only thing they can use is the MLE to get any small forward, and they never get a good one. And they need another rebounder to go with DeAndre Jordan, because even though DeAndre Jordan's a tremendous rebounder, nobody else is a good rebounder. Obviously, as we've always talked about with the Clippers, they're hard cap. They can't use any provisions. They can't use any more of their loopholes. They and then they have the dilemma that Chris Paul and Blake Griffin will be free agents. They're going to be demanding max money. Will they be able to keep them? Does Chris Paul even want to stay there? Does he think it's going to be even feasible to be able to compete in Los Angeles? There's a whole lot of questions there. Let's just get the first answer straight out the gate. Does Chris Paul stay in Los Angeles?
Probably.
Does Blake Griffin stay in Los Angeles?
Maybe not.
Okay, so you're less sure about Blake than you are about CP.
I've gone with sort of the conspiracy theory of, oh, you're bringing in Jerry West to keep the team together. And I think he sort of could, and most people could see it, the writing on the wall is, this team only has to, like, their window is so tiny to do anything, and they have no backup whatsoever, and no...
I personally think their window is closed.
But, yeah, so if you're bringing this team back, it's like, well, what are you doing? How far can you get with the team you have? You might need to subtract one player to get, you know, open up some other things for some other people.
Okay, so, but let me ask you this. The possibility of being able to re-sign them both. And then losing Redick, of course.
And that's the thing, is you want to lose Redick for, who is probably more valuable than, you know, due to just because of the fact he doesn't make $30 million. It's
very complicated. I mean, there's a whole lot of things in place. You talked about Jerry West coming in as an advisor, leaving the Warriors organization to join the Clippers. You know, I'll say this about the Clippers, and it reminds me of the Thunder last summer. When they made the Oladipo trade, everybody was saying with the Thunder, and oh, by the way, they also got Domantas Sabonis because they got the draft pick, that everybody was saying that when the Thunder pulled that trade off, they said, oh, this is Durant making calls so that he can get the people he wants. And I said, no, that might be a sign that they know Kevin Durant's gone and this is their alternate plan in place. And what I'm thinking is, even though the Clippers are hard capped and they have no draft picks, if they trade back in and it's first round, that might be the first sign that Chris Paul is gone.
Mm-hmm. And like, you know, once, if let's say you do re-sign Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, you have zero 3-point shooting on that team because Pierce is gone. So you have Mbamute Mute as your starting three. So Austin Rivers is your starting two by default.
Well, I mean, thank you, Daddy Doc. I mean, they paid him the money to be the backup point guard, and they give him the minutes to be the backup point guard. They don't really have a choice.
Yeah, so that's your starting two and three. There's no way you could compete in the NBA with zero 3-point shooting because Chris Paul, as you know, he can shoot, but he's not known for it.
If you were the Clippers, I think small forward's a big need here. Like, what would you do? Like, go into, like, say, let's just give you a very crazy scenario. Let's say they trade, let me give you an example. They trade Bryce Johnson. And they trade another player to get into the first round, and they wanted a small forward. Who would they get as a small forward? Like, who would be a good fit for them?
I was going to say, why don't you just keep Bryce Johnson?
Well, Bryce Johnson, he's not a good rebounder. He was supposed to be a good rebounder, and he doesn't get on the floor. You know, I mean,
because he was injured for the first half of the year, and he's just coming back, and he's coming back very slow. But
look at you defending Bryce Johnson coming to his aid. I mean, like what would be something? Something to look at small forward, like, I mean, Ananobi would be. If it's one of those guys where they go up as high as the lottery to trade in, then you know something's up. You know something's going on in Clipperland. You know what I'm saying?
Let's just assume they do nothing and we can move on.
Okay. The Los Angeles Lakers. Okay. There's a lot of needs here, especially on the defensive end. But do they feel like they kind of got the golden goose with the number two pick, if that's possible?
No.
Why not?
Because that golden goose has so much baggage attached to him.
A lot of goose shit, you mean?
As much as we like him, and, you know, I've gone back and forth, and it's just like, you know what? He's an 18-year-old kid, and he just wants to stay home close to his family. Okay, I sort of understand that. But, you know, his dad is just an ass, and
you're clearly talking about Markelle Fultz.
Yes.
because the Celtics are taking Lonzo Ball. No, I mean, Lonzo Ball, I really think he could be like a trend-setting talent for
you like him. For Lakers. I don't think he's as good as you claim he is.
I like his court vision. Maybe I'm going to wind up dying on that sword, but...
But if you're playing with TJ Leaf, who has been known to be... His high IQ is what fuels him, not his athletic ability. And who's the other guy? I can't think of his name.
Onabogu.
Yeah, Onabogu. You're playing with two great people. Well, doesn't that make you better by default? That's like, you know, in the NFL. Well, okay. Well,
yeah, but I'll say this. I felt like Ball took a team that had done nothing for 2 years, and the moment he got there, they were really, really good, and it was mainly because...
But it was two other freshmen there, too, who are also going to go in the first round.
Well, Onabogu was more of like a pitch-in role man, like kind of a shot-blocking big inside. TJ Leaf, I'll give you credit for. He was a big part of what made their offense so good, but I thought Ball kind of was the straw that stirred the drink.
Yeah, Ball was good, but his wonky shot I don't think will hold up in the NBA.
Yeah, it'll be hard for him to shoot going right pretty much every time.
And everybody's going to know that, and that's all they're going to do is force him to the right literally every play.
Yeah. And they want him to do stop and pop. I mean, the one thing with Ball is that he has run a lot of plays where he comes off the screen, you know, like a zipper cut, or, you know, where he's trying to get separation off of a screen, and they have like another point guard type that passes the ball to him off the elbow, and then he goes to work. You know, he can spot up for a three because he's got some height. He's 6 foot six. I'm not sure about his wingspan because he hasn't been measured in quite a long time. You know, the big baller brand and LeVar Ball stuff is all kind of just nonsense, is stupid bullshit. But I think when it comes to Lonzo himself as a player, I think he's really, really good. I think his defense is actually underrated. I think he's got the ability to, you know, be a good defender in the NBA. Offensively, I think he's awesome. I think
he's good, but it's going to be one of those things where if he has a I hope, you know, he's one of those players who just has super thick skin, because every game he's going to play, all he's going to hear about is everything. He has to literally be the MVP of the league in order to make everyone be quiet. If you have, if look at Brandon Ingram, he didn't have the best freshman year. Look at Russell. He didn't have the best freshman year in the NBA either. So if Lonzo Ball struggles for one game, he's just going to hear critics and reporters every day with microphones in his face saying, why aren't you, you know, as good as everything?
All right, but let me, okay, then let me give you the contrarian thought. What if he's actually good?
If he's good, but again, he has to be beyond good. You can't just be average good. He has to be so far ahead of rookie of the year.
Well, the comp we heard a lot is like Jason Kidd, like a mix between like Jason Kidd and what would be another one that's like kind of a non-scoring point guard who's like more of a playmaker.
Jason Kidd's a good comparison.
But kind of a little taller, not as good defensively.
Yeah, but what's going to happen when he plays Golden State and they just torch him? What's going to happen when San Antonio systematically runs him into the ground as they do with everybody? What's going to happen when you put Patrick Beverley, who's just going to sit and pester him all game?
Well, I think the Lakers are kind of braced for that. I remember that happened to John Wall when he first got with the Wizards, where they were getting destroyed. And Wall was still getting the minutes, and he was still, you know, chugging out bad games, but he eventually got it. You know, but
you're going to eventually.
Yeah.
You're going to eventually get it, but you have to be sort of on like a, you know, a Kyrie Irving tear from day one in order to silence the critics, and you can't just have a bad game anywhere. And all point guards are going to now look to light him up because now he has a target on his back. And you think, you know, the Lakers are young. Yes, they have potential. Yes, but they're still going to get beaten down by the better teams.
Okay, let's talk about the other possibilities just in case. You know, at number two, they really do, like some rumors have been thrown out, but who knows if they're smoke screens, that they might even reconsider taking Lonzo Ball. Jason Tatum, Josh Jackson, those are two of the main ones. Are there any other names that maybe the Lakers and Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka should look at?
No, the thing is, if you have the Tatum and Jackson, I think are sort of smoke screens. If you can like them as much as you want.
Well, Jackson worked out with the Lakers, so that's
Did Malik Monk.
Yeah.
Or was it De'Aaron Fox?
It may have been both. Who knows? You never know with these private workouts.
Yeah, but okay, we like Josh Jackson, but isn't Brandon Ingram your cornerstone?
Yeah, but do you think Ingram can play the two? Do you think he might be more effective as a long arm too?
And
so skinny.
Not then what's D'Angelo Russell, who's sort of not a point guard anymore?
Well, that's a good point. Let's get to that with Ball first. Fit wise with Russell, D Russ, do you think that can fit?
I don't know.
Like, who would be the off ball to in that situation? Ball's really good with the ball in his hands, but he doesn't always need to be the main passer off of a set in order to be involved. He can come, like I said, he can come off of the screen, get the ball from the facilitator, which might be Russell in that case, and then go to work. But can Russell be like the volume shooter and Ball be the facilitator, despite with one playing the one and the other playing the two?
I think it only worked for so long, because I think both of them are playmakers, and in the end we'll need something. Mm-hmm.
But
let's just go with Ball.
You think Jackson and Tatum are not good, or not
good fits?
Okay.
No.
All right, number 28 is their other pick. They got that in the Lou Williams trade. I have three names. Tony Bradley, big man out of North Carolina. Jordan Bell, I know this one's kind of like out of nowhere, but he's, you know, undersized power forward out of Oregon, really athletic, works his ass off, great shot blocker. He blocked every shot he could find against Kansas in the Elite Eight in the NCAA tournament. And Terrence Ferguson, an American 3-and-D type of shooting guard who was like a top prospect, went to Arizona and then but he didn't have good enough grades, I believe. So he played in Australia for 1 year where he had kind of middling numbers. What do you think about any of those three, or do you have one that might?
Bradley or Bell, you could sell me on either.
So you think a big might be like for the second, that second?
Because Mozgov is going to provide less and less as the years go on.
Yeah, I think
and
we're at the point where we need to just put Luol Deng and Mozgov's contracts together, because I just can't get them out of my mind from now on, because they're such terrible contracts and they were signed at the same time. So let's just call them Dangoff, or do you think Mozdang?
Mozdang.
I mean, is there any possibility they can dump both contracts, or is it impossible?
No. It's impossible. Too many years left.
Can they dump one? Maybe Mozgov. Everyone
would have to give. You'd have to give up somebody with it.
Good question. I mean,
you'd have to give up like Julius Randle with him.
Mm-hmm.
And is that worth it? No, not really. So
yeah, I mean, I heard rumors about maybe moving Randle because they don't want to pay him when his offer sheet comes next year. But who knows? Let's go ahead to the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, they don't have a draft pick, but they are hard cap because they gave basically the whole jackpot to Mike Conley. And I love Mike Conley. You're right, Chandler Parsons. I love Mike Conley. I mean, I think he's a terrific player. I just don't think he's a superstar. Is that fair to say?
Well, he's super underrated, and so we don't need to talk about Memphis too much. But yeah, he puts up numbers, doesn't get the heralded because it's just the Gasol Randolph show, but basically their pick is Deniana Davis, and Wayne Baldwin IV is there too, who had a horrible rookie year. So
I'll say this: they have had really good success with either reclamation projects of players that they themselves did not draft in the second round, or second round picks of their own, guys like James Ennis, like Andrew Harrison, Jamichael Green. I don't know if he got picked in the second round when he came to the NBA.
No, he was undrafted.
He was an undrafted free agent, but he had come from another place, and they were able to kind of groom him to the point where he was actually starting ahead of Zach Randolph. So I would not be shocked at all if they fought their way into the second round. Like for $1 million.
And if they did, who would they take? Who knows?
Oh, Lord knows. But I do think it'll be kind of like an interesting prospect. Remember that I think they were the team that had Josh Selby, and it didn't work out with Josh Selby. But there was a moment there where you thought.
I think Memphis is the team that took him.
That's what I'm saying. Memphis took Josh Selby, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, and the other one was Seldon. Like Wayne Seldon wound up at the end of the day on his D-League carousel. He wound up with Memphis, and he started a game. He started a game in the playoffs because Tony Allen was out. And that's one of the team needs that I mentioned, that Tony Allen, there's a very good chance he might leave, take less, and go to one of those taxpayer contender type of teams like Cleveland or maybe Golden State, something like that. I feel like they have some needs, even though they are hitting their hard cap, but I do think they can buy their way back in. But because there's so many scenarios, we can't really talk about them. Let's move on with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Their absolute dying need is defense. I think Jonathan Isaac at 7 should be the pick, and if they get the inkling that Isaac can get picked earlier, they should trade up to get him.
Yeah, because also the problem with them is they don't need to get younger either. They don't really need a draft pick.
Have they given up on Chris Dunn yet?
I don't think they've given up on him. Why would you after 1 year?
I mean, that was the number 5 pick or number 4 pick?
Number 5 pick, yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, it's early to give up on him, but I know. Listen, I mean, if you're a point guard in the NBA, I'm not trying to pick on the guy, but if you're going to be a point guard in the NBA, you got to have a jump shot. And he could not make anything. He was an incredibly inefficient offensive point guard. And his defense was not really there, trying to.
Yeah, but to be fair, all of Minnesota's defense wasn't really there because to figure out Tibbs' system is not the easiest thing in the world.
Do you think it's fair to have urgency for Minnesota because of the fact that Levine is has the knee injury? He's coming off of that, but he's also got restricted free agency coming up. You got to pay Andrew Wiggins this summer so that you can give him, because you want to get him the kind of contract that Giannis Antetokounmpo got, where you can get him kind of at a discount. I'm not trying to say – it's crazy to say in the NBA today that $25 million a year is a discount, but it kind of is. You know,
every million helps.
So you want to try to get
in this day and age where, you know, you can have one player take up 35%, every penny really counts.
So you got that window of opportunity where you got Towns and Wiggins on rookie contracts. This coming season is going to probably be the last small time salary for Wiggins. So you got the chance to really scoop up someone good, and maybe you don't want to give up on Chris Dunn yet. You want to just have him learn under or behind Ricky Rubio one more year if you don't want to trade Rubio yet.
Well, that's the problem is, you know, okay, if Isaac is gone, you're really, you take a point guard. Well, what do you do now? You have Tyus Jones, you have Dunn, you have Rubio. There's just too many point guards in the kitchen. And then, you know, I guess the outside pick would have to be Lauri Markkanen, who, you know, just a stretch four, can play opposite of Towns, I guess.
I think Malik Monk's a possibility here too, because they need shooting in the worst way. So, I mean, and I think Monk would actually fit well, because they do kind of need a true two guard. You know, and I mean, they can also play Monk in the off guard position, which is good for him, which is good for Minnesota. Because, I mean, the one thing I would say about Wiggins and Towns is that I love those guys, but boy, they love holding the ball. I don't want to say they're like Marbury and Garnett, but they're the kind of players where once the ball's in their hands, they're probably not giving it up. I mean, Towns has some pretty high assist marks for a big man, but Wiggins, man, that man's a black hole. He's going to go to the free throw line, and he's going to get his.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was a very condescending agreement.
It's Minnesota. We have the same thing every year of they could turn around the corner, just another young pick, and it's just we see the same thing how many years.
So you think they're gonna? So you think Monk is a screw up if they do it?
It's they seem to have problems with just whoever they draft, and
if they pick Isaac, I don't think they'll screw it up. But I mean, they gotta hope Orlando will take him first. That's gonna be the problem. They got Orlando ahead of them in that draft ranking. So,
well, their problem is if they pay Shabazz Muhammad like a lot.
I think Muhammad's gone, because I think if they decide to keep LaVine and get him in November before the November or October deadline, and then they re-sign Wiggins, then you got to worry about Towns extension the following summer. They're going to have to decide with Shabazz Muhammad, okay, we're done. We already gave Gorgui Dieng his money too. So
yeah, and that's, you have to figure out who's the players you want, as opposed to just we have new picks, new lottery picks every year.
And then there's a possibility of that medical exemption with Nikola Pekovic. But we are still kind of in that early stages, is it fair to say, about that one?
No, I think they're fully getting him off the books now.
Yeah, I mean, that's become a big deal, because there's a lot of these contracts where it's kind of right around like the 2014, 2013 range where money started going up salary-wise, and a lot of these guys, they just didn't last, like Chris Bosh. We just mentioned Pekovic. There was another one. Wasn't it Festus Azili, where they had where it wasn't a lot of money, but every penny helped for Portland, because they're like dangerously close to paying the tax. So they were just trying to find any penny they could pinch. But for Minnesota, that's the only pick that they have. They don't have a second round pick. So Jonathan Isaac, Lauri Markkanen, I threw out there Malik Monk. You're not as sure about that, so I'll throw him out. So Markkanen, Isaac, which one you like between them?
Isaac fits the team the best.
And if Isaac's gone, Markkanen's the pick?
Yeah, he's.
They need a shooter. Kind of. They need a shooter. I mean, that's. And Markkanen does fit that bill, even though he's a power forward versus a shooting guard. Oh, the New Orleans Pelicans. They did not keep their lottery pick because it was top three protected, but they didn't get into the top three. They gave that up in the DeMarcus Cousins trade. Basically, their draft pick is DeMarcus Cousins. Is that fair
to say? So, who's their savior at number 40?
I have Dwayne Bacon at Florida State.
They do need a shooter,
and they need athleticism. The one thing they desperately need is a small forward, because they signed all that money last year to basically like a sabermetrics guy in Solomon Hill, a guy who played good in advanced minutes, but once they gave him starters minutes, he couldn't cut the mustard.
He was terrible. So what about Blossom Game?
Yeah. I mean, he's not as athletic as Bacon is. He's not as strong as Bacon is. But the funny part about Blossom Game is that in the 2016 combine, he performed really well as a junior, and everyone thought he was going to stay in the draft, and he didn't. He decided to go back to Clemson, to the bewilderment of everyone. And he had a kind of, fair to say, a down year at Clemson, but he's still a really good player. He's got some nice size. I want to say somewhere around what, like 6'7".
Yes.
Yeah, and he's got a bit of a 3-point shot, but his 3-point shot really cratered in his senior year, for no particular reason. We'll see what he can do, but he's a guy that when he performed against pros, he looked pretty good. So I'm kind of curious to see how he can play in the NBA when he actually gets minutes. I would compare him more to like a Wayne Selden, whereas with Bacon, I think Bacon is better than Selden. You know, I think Bacon could be potentially a very good player, you know, not a starter level, but like a good bench player. Let's go on to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Their needs here, they need a solid backup point guard. Samaj Christen. I know Russell Westbrook takes a lot of minutes, and he deserves them, and there's a chance he's going to win the MVP in the NBA awards show or whatever they call that. But they need a true backup point guard that does not like let the team just bleed out when Russell gets a break. Samaj Christen was not getting it done.
Juwan Evans, then.
So you like Juwan Evans at number 21, which is their only draft pick, by the way.
Why not just get this quick lightning guy to keep the pace going?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the point guard class, the point guards really drop
off.
Yeah,
he's got a little bit of Reggie Jackson in him. He's not as big as Reggie Jackson, but he's got a little bit of his game when he was in Boston College. You know, Juwan Evans came from Oklahoma State, played very, very fast pace, super efficient player. He can make a jump shot. He's a good playmaker. He ran a lot of pick and roll at Oklahoma State, so he's familiar with kind of an NBA system, not necessarily an NBA offense because it's way more faceted than anything a college coach can teach. Better athletes, too. So there's a lot to learn there, but I think Evans might be a good pick. And also it's kind of a fixer-upper from the whole disaster of trying to groom Cameron Payne, and then you trading him to Chicago for Doug McDermott and Taj Gibson. So by the way, the Thunder, big win on that trade?
I don't know.
You're still not sure about Cameron Payne at point guard?
Oh, that one. I was thinking just in general because I'm like, well, you gave a ton of money to Oladipo, who's really...
Oh, the Oladipo one, I would say it's even. You know, I would say it's actually even. I don't want to call it a lose-lose, but it's kind of even. I think Oladipo's okay. But
oh, yeah, the campaign you gave up.
Yes.
Campaign for McDermott, who you like, and
Taj Gibson.
Gibson's a free agent.
And he gave away Anthony Morrow, who was worthless. So the other ones I consider Tyler Lydon, a power forward out of Syracuse, good defensive player, but he can also make threes. Not in shape, but he's a good shooter. And then TJ Leaf, who we brought up from UCLA. I'm not really sure about that. 3-point shooting can be improved upon, but Juwan Evans seems like a good shoe-in. The Portland Trailblazers, this is fascinating. First of all, why is it actually a bad thing that they have three first-round picks, Adam?
They have no money and no spots for them to play.
And also the fact that really none of the people in their spots are really good fits. I mean, they can get centers. You know, they desperately need centers. But, I mean, how many of these spots can you actually use?
And that's the thing, is if you use all these picks, you get three big guys. You're just basically throwing crap at a wall and hope one of those three stick.
And you got to pay them all or find a way to trade your way out, which I think is very, very likely. I think Portland will probably trade their way down with either the number 26 pick or the number 20 pick. The number 15 pick, which is right out of the lottery, I think they'll actually keep. Or is that in the lottery?
What?
Number 15.
No, 15 is out of the lottery.
It's the first pick out of the lottery. So I think they'll keep that one. I don't think they'll trade out of that one. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say. So obviously one of these will probably have to be presumably Isaiah Hartenstein, just because you need an international just to keep out.
Yeah, what about the other one from Gran Canaria, 7'2" center, Andzej Pozeshniks?
He is Latvian, not... He plays in the Gran Canaries. He
plays in the Gran Canaries.
In the Spanish league.
But he's actually lighter on his feet, they say, than people expect. He's not like a Rudy Gobert, where like he's like I mean, Rudy Gobert is a fantastic defender in the NBA, but he's not like exactly a guy that's gonna be like running the floors like a gazelle. Whereas with with Pozeshnik, like, it's very surprising how actually good he is at running the floor, according to many that have seen him work out. He actually impressed in a workout in L.A. About a few weeks ago, and that's kind of why he's been rising up the boards, along with the fact that Jonathan Jean, the French center that we mentioned, his stock has absolutely crashed because of the blood disorder. But
yeah, but this is just sort of take a big man, Tony Bradley, Anagbu, Justin Patton, Jarrett Allen if he falls
John
a little
Collins,
bit.
Zach Collins.
Yeah, it's just, well, okay, you need big guys, you need rebounding, as you've shown you have none of that. So, okay, obviously one of those picks will be used for that.
I think Patton is a good pick there. I would actually pretty much vouch for that one. Zach Collins, you know, not bad. I think he might be gone by number 15 anyway. But
I meant John Collins.
Here's the thing about John and Zach. Like, I keep mixing them up because this is probably right around where they're going to get picked. I've seen John Collins be considered as low as in the 20s. I've seen him picked right in the lottery. You know, so it's hard to kind of gauge him. Whereas, and with Zach Collins, I think it's somewhere between 11 and 15 that he's going to get picked. So, you know, this is sort of his wheelhouse. Justin Patton is sort of similar. I think he's going to get picked in the really either really close to the lottery or in the lottery. Really talented center. He's just very raw. With the 20th pick and the 26th pick, like I said, you can go international. You could go with EK Anagbu, like you said. There's also DJ Wilson out of Michigan at 26. If you like him, he's sort of a really interesting prospect. I like DJ Wilson. But I'm not absolutely sure. Are you done with Portland here?
Yeah, let's move on.
Okay. I actually had it a little bit out of order based on the lettering, but the Phoenix Suns are next. I probably should have done the Suns before the Blazers, but here we are. The Phoenix Suns. Do you feel like they kind of lost by not getting a top three pick?
They lost and they won because the Phoenix just needs so much help. What are you going to do? The top two are point guards. You do not need another point guard.
Unless you trade Eric Bledsoe.
Who's good luck with that?
Why do you say that? He's a valuable contract, and he might not even be happy in Phoenix.
That's the thing, is neither of them are happy in Phoenix, and Tyler Ulis was playing towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
And getting major minutes. So it's like the last thing you need is just more Kentucky point guards. And
so you're very much anti De'Aaron Fox for number four.
That's the worst thing they possibly could do. They need a small forward. They do not have one on their team. They wasted both picks last year on the exact same position. And you have, you know, restricted free agent Alex Len, but you still have, but he's been
you
lost
still got
Tyson Chandler
on your books, yeah.
And you have nobody at the three because you trade away PJ Tucker. So, in a way, you get, you know, Tatum.
I think Tatum's a perfect fit. I think their dream pick is Josh Jackson. If they can somehow have Josh Jackson fall to four, that would be a miracle for them. They would pick him up in a hurry. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think Jackson will be gone at number three to Philadelphia. So if he's gone, by then, and you can't move up or make a deal with Philadelphia, because I remember that it was the Philadelphia that they made a deal with in a three-way with Michael Carter Williams and Brandon Knight, and that's how the Brandon Knight Phoenix Phoenix Suns era started, right? And so unless they can make a deal and move up, they're going to be at four, and Jackson will very likely be gone. I think Jason Tatum's a good fit. We haven't really talked about him much, you know, as we've been discussing the draft. What do you think of Jason Tatum out of Duke?
You like him. He's
a natural scoring small forward. He's like the prototypical scoring ISO small forward. You know, he's a guy who can back down. He can rebound. He's pretty good defensively at getting his hand on the ball. I'm not sure like where his I'm not sure if he's like a guy that can play great defensively. But, you know, defensively, he's a little more multifaceted than the people would expect. He's rangy. He's right around 6'8", which is about the same height as Josh Jackson. I just like his scoring. His scoring is huge. You know, I think that's going to be a big benefit for him.
And do they don't have a second-round pick, do they?
They actually have two. They have.
Oh, then I am completely wrong.
They have the number 32 pick, and they have, which is, I believe, their own. And then they have the number 54 pick, which they got from the Toronto Raptors. I'm not even. I wish I could remember how that happened.
PJ Tucker.
You're probably right. At 32, the two I considered are Derek White, a two guard out of Colorado. He played JUCO ball and played 1 year at Colorado, and Colorado had a terrible year in the Pac-12, so nobody saw him. But he went to the Portsmouth Invitational, which is a tournament where college seniors or graduating seniors out of college go to show like NBA scouts what they can do. It's like kind of their last chance. And Derek White played really, really well at the Portsmouth Invitational. He got a combine invite. He did well there. And now he's sort of like high on the board in terms of like high second round. Some people consider him even late in the first round. Taller guard, kind of somewhere around 6'7", I want to say. But he can play the point guard position, so it kind of makes him an attractive piece. And then there's Devin Robinson, who's a small forward, really, really athletic, out of Florida. So there's a couple of guys like that. The other guy at number 54 is Kobe Simmons, because that just seems like such a Phoenix Suns type of pick.
Pick a local guy makes sense.
Well, not just that. It's just the idea that, you know, Simmons is one of those guys that kind of reminds me of Archie Goodwin.
Well, why not just go for Isaiah Briscoe?
I don't think Isaiah Briscoe is going to get drafted.
Oh, he's not, but he's a Kentucky guard.
Yeah,
so
I think what happened with Briscoe is that he wound up out of position because of the multitude of prospects that they had and the fact that they kind of had a logjam, and he got stuck having to play the three spot, even though he's really a point guard. You know, it was just like a square peg in a round hole. He's a great passer, and he's pretty good defensively, but he cannot shoot to save his life, and he's small. You know, so he's got good quickness though, but. That we're getting off track, but I don't think Briscoe's getting picked. Okay, the Sacramento Kings. I think this is an important draft class for the Kings. I think they got to get it right at number 5 and number 10.
Oh, this is their
opus.
Yeah, they have no chance. They have no choice but to, if they need to get better. You have all young rookie talent in the thing. This is the time where you need to bring in. You need a point guard. You need a small forward.
And they need rebounding really badly too.
You need now that rebounding,
yeah.
You know, you have Cauley Stein and Papa Giannis who are your centers, but
Scott Labissiere too had a couple. He had one really nice game.
He had a couple of good games, but he's more of the stretch four and.
Mm-hmm. Tatum's there, or there's a possibility Tatum will be there.
Tatum will be a perfect fit for them.
De'Aaron Fox. This is one where – are you kind of in on the De'Aaron Fox of the Kings campaign?
I am very in for that because that is what the team needs.
Very
a leader.
Good defensive guard. Super,
who's just fearless.
Yeah, he's super-duper quick. And then Jonathan Isaac, right? He's in that wheelhouse too. So they sort of have their pick of the litter at number 5, but they got to fucking get it right.
Yeah, that's, but Isaac will be the – if they pick Isaac, it's just the – that's the spell of doom of, well – okay, we have somebody who's not an offensive player. Well, let's put him with Cauley Stein and just have nobody score on offense.
Is there a chance they can get super lucky, get who they want between Fox and Tatum at 5, and get Isaac at 10 if he falls?
No, they're mostly you. If you get Tatum and you hope a point guard falls to you at 10, but that's sort of the hope.
A few at 10 I considered. Luke Kennard, a shooter out of Duke. Really good shooter, though. Harry Giles out of Duke also. And then Justin Jackson out of North Carolina were three that just immediately came to mind. Did you have any others, like maybe OG Anunoby?
You got Zach Collins who could fit there.
Yeah, give him a
A lot of people have Laurie Market in there, but
I don't see that. Yeah, that
as a good fit.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good fit either. And then at number 34, I've got Ivan Rabb. I think Ivan Rabb would seem like a guy that slipped through the cracks in the second round, and the Kings kind of scoop him up. You know,
Ivan Rabb or Caleb Swanigan.
Caleb Swanigan out of Purdue, the prolific.
We haven't mentioned yet, and I assume you're going to mention him with San Antonio coming up next, because now that the best Euro is gone, well, you're sort of back to the drawing board. So
yeah, well, San Antonio at 29, this one will shock you because you'll never think that this guy would be like a like one of those Spursian type of players, but I like Bam Adebayo. I think they're actually going to go with more youth. Like, I think they liked what they had with DeJounte Murray, and I can't remember who else. Like, I wasn't in Davis Bertans, where they felt like they kind of got more athleticism, and it sort of gave them a little bit more oomph to the team that they didn't have in the previous years, because they actually went out of left field with their draft picks, and it worked out in their favor in a ways. They still obviously have a long way to go, but I think they might go with Bam Adebayo. There's another player named Matthias Lassort, who's sort of I think he's a French small forward. Is that fair? Is that right?
Yeah. You know, and you're just, no, he's a power forward. But yeah, that's just the best Euro available, and that's who
that's a Spurs thing. But what I'm,
you know, the Spurs are going to take their second round pick is going to be the obscure, unknown international guy.
Yeah, and then Tyler Lydon was a guy I also like at 29 for the Spurs. You know, just a good 3D guy. Jaron Blossom came at number 59, but I think he'll be gone by then. And then there's Sterling Brown out of SMU at number 59. You know, there's a million names you can think of, you know, in the second to last pick of the NBA draft, but those are just two I immediately thought of. Okay, the last team in the West in this marathon of a part one, Utah Jazz. Your team needs... You absolutely need to keep Gordon Hayward, even though it's looking a little more and more likely that it might not happen. Do you put a number on that?
Oh, it's 50-50.
Okay.
I don't think it's even clear cut, as it's just one of those things like, oh yeah, he can stay, he's happy there, but you know, playing for your old coach who recruited you and you have a bond with, it's just like, well, that's not the best team to have.
I think Jazz fans need to be kind of nervous. I hate to be that guy, but here's the thing too: if you re-sign Hayward and say you decide that you want to keep George Hill and keep this together, you're going to be in the tax with this team. And oh, by the way, Derek Favors' deal is up next year. So then what do you...
Yeah, that's Utah needs to decide who their core is going to be, and it all depends on Hayward.
Yeah, Hayward signs. And I don't think they can wait until 2018 to decide what the core is. I think they have to do it now, you know? And they have such a pit at point guard, especially if they don't keep George Hill, or if they're not able to retain George Hill in free agency, because I like Dante Exum, but he ain't cutting the mustard. He's got to get better. I don't know if he's ready to be a starting point guard, and Trey Burke already failed the test. They traded him away. They also need athleticism at point guard, at shooting guard, because Alec Burks, again,
can't stay healthy.
Not cutting the mustard. I'm sorry. So, number 24, I looked at Frank Jackson. I also looked at Dwayne Bacon. I don't think he'll go that high. I think that's a little too high for Dwayne Bacon, but I kind of thought about him because of the athleticism. And then DJ Wilson, who was another guy that I liked. They also have the number 30th pick. Frank Jackson might be there too. Dwayne Bacon will probably be there too. So,
yeah, big men, DJ Wilson, Ivan Rabb, mm-hmm. Swanigan.
I think first round's too high for Swanigan, personally.
Motley, maybe, for 30.
Maybe. At 42, I actually had a local project out of Utah, Kyle Kuzma. He was a junior power forward, but he played really well in the combine. Nobody really expected that. He showed a lot more dimension than people thought he had when he played at the University of Utah. And then at number 55, I went with a shooter, Wesley Owundu, out of Kansas State. I think you like Owundu.
Okay. I'd say more Dwayne Bacon in the second round.
You think Bacon will probably be available? I said the Pelicans would take him if he was there, but at 40. But you think he'll probably be around in that range?
Yeah, in that range, 40, 42. You know, somebody could trade up in the second round. You never know. It's second round picks, so they're not worth. They're worth a ton, but then they're worth nothing. So you just target the player you want. There's no real, like, oh my god, this guy's falling to us. It's just like, no, we have to get whom we want when we want him.
Yeah, if you want to double down and get a point guard there, Monte Morris at Iowa State might be around in the early second round. That might be a good one. Derek White, who we mentioned out of Colorado, you can kind of convert him into a point guard if you feel like. So
PJ Dozier of your
PJ Dozier out of South Carolina, who played with Sindarius Thornwell. We didn't mention Thornwell in this part. I think we might mention him a little bit more in the second one, but he's an interesting player. I mean, obviously people saw him help carry South Carolina to the Final Four. He's a really good, prolific offensive player, but he just doesn't have an NBA body. I think that's the biggest problem for him, you know. Whereas Semi Ojeleye, he has an NBA body. He's got the body of a pro wrestler. He's a good shooter. It's just that he doesn't really have any more to his game but that. You know, he's an interesting player. So there's a lot of names there that we haven't mentioned yet that we probably will mention in the next part that will kind of put more facets into some of these picks. But as we finish up here with the Western Conference, like, how do you feel overall about some of the you know, ideas that we had?
Things have to fall the right way. Or you have, you know, you can't have Phoenix take another guard from Kentucky. Minnesota can't just take another best talent.
Minnesota's got to get number 7 right, and I feel like the Kings really have to hit it.
And the problem with Minnesota is they always take the best player available. Well, yeah, that's why you have just gluts of people at the same position, and nobody's really super good. And you know, you have Denver doesn't need a pick. They just need a veteran. And
then you got three teams that don't even have draft picks in the West because
Portland has to figure out a way to get lower on the cap. And,
yeah,
you know, you're going to see a couple. You're going to see maybe an obscure European name from them just because, like, well, we need to get somebody. We have this pick. We couldn't trade it away. We need to just put a name out there. So they might be reaching for a Euro.
Yeah, and then you got the overlapping story of Ball to the Lakers. Will it fit? Is he the next one? You know, can he do – you know, all that different stuff, that all the hype train that goes with Ball because of stuff that's been put on him, not for him, but just something that's just been happening with Ball because of family and a lot of hype that's been surrounding him. You know, I think he's a good player, though. I'll vouch for him. So.
Oh yeah, he's a top.
But is he the star? And is he going to be better than Markelle Fultz? I mean,
Is he a top 5 talent in this draft? Yes, but in the end, we've seen players draft to the top 5, and you try to force your way into a system. You know, Luke Walton's done well with that team, but if you're trying to force your way into I'm the leader, you have to hope everyone on that team's like going to say okay and. Who knows?
Yeah, outside of that, I mean, that's kind of the gist of the Western Conference versus the NBA draft, you know, hitting all the points there with Denver, Portland, L.A., you know, Sacramento, Minnesota sort of being in dire situations. But a lot of interesting stuff, and we're going to continue this with part 2 for the Eastern Conference as we talk about all those teams there in the NBA draft. But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. We'll see y'all again.